Thanks, Nathan. Good morning, everybody, on 88.1 WIPR. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you are with us today. Coming up a little later, the Muslim scholar Najiba Saeed will join me to talk about the lecture that she'll be giving next week on a series created by the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. The series examines the notion of imagining justice for Baltimore from the perspectives of each of the three Abrahamic religions. Professor Saeed will talk about her peace-building efforts in California that focus on, among other things, distrust between law enforcement and communities of color. We'll begin today with a conversation about legal justice, another in our series of conversations as we approach the anniversary of the riots and uprising that followed the death of Freddie Gray last April. The anniversary of the violence that broke out following his funeral is on Wednesday. So last spring, even before the curfews were lifted and National Guard troops left, law enforcement officials and prosecutors began investigating crimes, both serious and menial, that were committed on the afternoon and evening of April 27th. In a press conference last summer, then Deputy Police Commissioner Kevin Davis said, quote, "We're going to run this out until we've identified everyone who's committed crimes." So this morning we ask, where do those prosecutions stand a year later? Tricia Bishop is the deputy editorial page editor for the Baltimore Sun. Last month, she published an essay in which she chronicled the seemingly haphazard way in which justice has been applied to people arrested for allegedly committing crimes during the uprising, and she joins me in the studio. Good morning, Tricia. It's good to see you.
Good morning.
First of all, congratulations to you and your colleagues for being a finalist for the Pulitzer this year. That's quite an achievement.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
Let's start with the sort of the basic numbers of the arrests during and directly following the uprising last year. More than 500 people arrested. But what happened to summer all of those people?
Well, the majority of them, there were, I asked for a list of names of people arrested between April 25th and May 3rd from police, and I was given a list of 544 names. Of those, at least 300 of them were never charged with anything at all, or at least they appear to be. They never show up in online court records. 44 of them were juveniles, so they wouldn't show up in online court records, so that's, you can wipe out 344 there. 100 of those people, at least 100, were charged with solely with curfew violations, and those weren't prosecuted. So that, when you take all of that out, you're left with roughly 80 people who were actually charged with crimes that ranged from burglary to malicious destruction and theft. And there were a few assault charges as well. And 20 of them were charged with rioting. Yeah. When you get down to all of that, less than half of those people were actually, well, actually half of those 42 cases were thrown out of the 80. There were roughly two dozen convictions out of all of these 544 arrests when you get right down to it.
So a whole lot of people arrested, which I suppose isn't unusual. I mean, I understand that about 60% of the people who are arrested are not actually charged with a crime, in generally speaking, right? So, and of course, it's a, you know, a riot and a very, you know,
chaotic situation.
And you can sort of understand how police maybe just be grabbing people left and right and say, okay, you know, we're going to put you under arrest.
Yes, you can understand that, but there, it is not without consequence. For some,
sure.
Some people were held for weeks up to even months on charges that were later ultimately dropped.
So yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how you did this then. Some of this information is available online. I mean, how did you figure out that we go from the number 544 to less than two dozen?
So I took the full list of names, the 544 names, put that into an Excel spreadsheet, and then I essentially went to an online court records website where I could search people's names. And I searched everyone's names, and when I didn't see 300 of them, they were not charged. The 44, the juveniles, they would not show up in there. I checked them anyway just to make sure they weren't charged as adults in something. And until I whittled it down to this group.
And that's
just
a policy about juveniles.
You know,
the
juveniles
are never going to show up on online court records.
Correct, unless they are charged as an adult.
Right. Right. So then you go through and you spent a long time doing this. I mean, this takes a long time.
It took a while, and some time had to pass naturally anyway, just so the cases could work their way through to their natural end.
You write about one woman who was held in jail on $50,000 bail for almost 7 months.
Right, and she's not the worst. There was a man charged with similar crimes. I think she was charged with burglary, theft, and malicious destruction. And he was charged with similar crimes. He, on $2,500 bail, and he was held for 11 months before his charges were dropped last month.
$2,500 bail.
Yes.
Her bail was $50,000.
Same kinds of charges.
Right.
We don't know if there were extenuating circumstances or prior records that might have contributed to the difference, but there was a vast difference. I found that again and again, that they were there would be similar charges and very different bail amounts. And in some cases, people charged with violent crimes had lower bail amounts than nonviolent crimes.
On 88.1, it's Marilyn Morning. I'm Tom Hall. My guest this morning, Tricia Bishop. She is the deputy editorial page editor at the Baltimore Sun. If you are held for 7 months, 11 months in jail, and then released without being charged even, do you have any recourse against the city? Can you say, wait a minute, you just disrupted my life for 11 months. You took away any chance I had of making a living, et cetera. I mean, is there, what, where does a person go when that happens?
Unfortunately, I think it happens fairly regularly, or at least relatively so. Unless there is some sort of, I don't know the full law on this, but unless there is something purposely done here to you, I wouldn't see that you have any recourse. They were before judges regularly. There were postponements asked for in the case of the man who was held for 11 months. There were four postponements in his case, and they were signed off on. And it's sometimes justice moves slowly.
Yeah, I should say. So let's talk about this disparity. And you think, I think if I recall correctly in your piece, you actually used the word haphazard when
yes.
it comes to the application of justice, particularly in the amounts of bail that are set. People made a note at the time that a young man named Alex Bullock, who was the Alan Bullock, sorry, was photographed. I mean, everybody saw him on television smashing the windshield of the police cruiser.
Yes.
He turned himself in. At the urging of his stepfather and mother, who said, look, you know, they know who you are. They can see you. Rather than have the police come to our house, why don't you go there and say, this is me, I did it. His bail was set at $500,000.
Yes, his moment, he was photographed, and so people saw it. It was a widely disseminated photo. His $500,000 bail, though, was, just to put it in perspective, higher than the bails that were set for the six police officers who were charged in Freddie Gray's death. They, in those cases, I believe it was four of the officers charged with misdemeanor crimes had $250,000 bails, while the two with felony charged with felony crimes have $350,000 bails.
And it's pretty random, isn't it?
It appears that way. You go before... The way the system works is you're brought in, and once you're arrested, you go before a bail commissioner for your first appearance. They will set a bail. You can ask to have it reviewed by a judge later. It could vary by commissioner or personal. There's a lot of subjectivity in the system that we're not necessarily comfortable with, at least on the editorial board of the Baltimore Sun.
Sure. And the commissioners are not judges. They're not sometimes even legal people.
Right.
I mean, they're required to have a college degree, but they're not required to be a legally trained person. They're not paralegals.
Right.
They're not people, you know, they're not lawyers. They're people who are given the evidence by the police and then just decide if this person's a flight risk or if this person's a risk to public safety or whatever, and they just make an arbitrary decision. But they have sole discretion to figure out the number, right? They are the person, they are the group of people who can say 500,000, 50,000, 2,500.
Yes, that's where it starts. And then if a judge, you can ask for a judge to review that later. And there was one case of a person who was arrested and given a $100,000 bail by a commissioner. The judge who later reviewed the case said no bail, they can be released.
Yeah. When we talk about recourse, there were six men who were arrested.
Of course, civil suits.
Right. And there are civil suits. Perhaps the most famous, a gentleman named Larry Lomax,
yes.
who was photographed being pepper sprayed.
Right.
And it wasn't even regular pepper spray. There was something, it was an intense version of pepper spray that was even worse than normal pepper spray. But
he was actually convicted, and his conviction was overturned on appeal.
Right. And the others either had charges dropped or whatever, but the six of them have come together to file a civil suit. And the same attorney representing them is the attorney that got a big settlement for the family of Freddie Gray.
Yes. I think they're alleging misconduct or maybe brutality.
Right, brutality and false arrest and
right.
that sort of thing.
And one man says his arm was broken by an officer, and then he was never even arrested.
So. Yeah. I mean, I wonder, do you have a speculation about whether we're going to see more of these kinds of lawsuits, given the fact that, you know, so many people were arrested and so very few people were actually charged? I mean, does this bode... I think this snowball is going to, you know, get some traction.
I couldn't say. It may have. I don't know what the statute of limitations is on these, but it's certainly possible.
And when you're arrested and you're required to post bail, Many people get then, you know, enmeshed in this bail bonds system. I mean, the system of cash bail in Baltimore is something that a lot of people really want to completely overhaul, if not completely get rid of. But a lot of times then these bail bondsmen give you the money to pay the 10% of the bail that you're required to pay. And then you're sort of in debt to them for years and years and years in some cases.
Well, yes, and you need to show back up, right? Show up to court, and then not necessarily for the full amount, but there are the hypocrisy with the bail system. In large part, they're supposed to put 10% down. You can often be released for a fraction of that amount, as little as 1%. So on the editorial board of The Sun, we've advocated that we move away from an asset-based bail system altogether and a commissioner-based bail system toward one, a risk assessment tool, a computerized tool that can decide whether you're a flight risk or not, or you're a public safety risk, and they make the decision on something other than whether or not you can just simply afford release.
And there's software that can do this. You're basically putting your trust in the software rather than in these individual commissioners.
And there are, D.C. has used a system like this for many years now. 2 years ago, the legislature actually looked at implementing such a computerized risk tool, but a bill failed, and there was a commission to look at reforming the pretrial release system here in Maryland, and actually a recommendation was made to the legislature in December to do away with cash bail.
Tricia Bishop is the deputy editorial page editor for The Sun. Her essay last month in The Sun is called Uneven Justice for Baltimore's Rioters. We've got a link to it on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Tricia, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Coming up after a break for the news, a Muslim scholar from California talks about her work building trust between police and communities of color. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Here's Nathan.